by my H. Samuel Everett watch, so we can start the meeting. I think everybody is here who should be here. Welcome, to begin with, to representatives of Freedom Leisure, particularly to Liz, who many of us will know from her time at the Borough Council. Anyway, nice to see you again, Liz.
Thank you.
We have got quite a bit of items on, so let's go through the initial stuff. First of all, the minutes of 23rd of August. Do we agree they're a true and correct record?
Agreed, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. All agreed. Excellent. Thank you. There we are. Signed. Over to you then. Public apologies. Any apologies?
There are no apologies now, Mr. Chairman. Everybody's here.
Good. Public question time.
That's nil.
Okay. Councillor session.
That's nil.
Called in items.
There are none.
Members items.
And there are none.
Good. So we come on to officers' reports. Item 7A. It's a Freedom Leisure annual report 2021-22. Now, apart from Liz, who's here to introduce it, I believe we also... Is it Geoffrey Rowe?
Jeremy.
Thank you very much. Sorry about that. Welcome, Jeremy.
Thank you.
Okay, so, members, let's hear now the presentation from Freedom Leisure on the annual report 2021-2022. Over to you.
Of our services and reopening of facilities coming out of the pandemic. And it's just good to reflect on the fact that we didn't have a full year of operation in 21-22. Our leisure centres reopened on the 12th of April, and then other services followed throughout the year, with the Gatehouse Theatre reopening on the 16th of July, and the Stafford Half Marathon, that traditionally takes place in March, moving to the September date. We saw our Panto return in December, and the 2022 Half Marathon returning to its March date in March this year. It's great to see that we had a good recovery coming out of the pandemic, but there was still some nervousness from our customers and consumers around returning to facilities and fully engaging with our leisure services. I think most of the details that you see in the report sort of reflect that in some of the figures and the performance indicators that we have. But we had some great successes amongst quite a challenging 12 months. Mr. Chair, I think that's really, you've all had the report and open the floor to questions.
Right. May I have one comment? And you did rather bug me a bit. You see, this reads to me more like a sort of public relations document or a marketing document rather than a report of what was going on over that time. It's the sort of thing, these anecdotal things. It's like how wonderful this was, you know, how... I mean, it seems to me like one of these adverts you get in magazines that are being sold to relatively aged people saying, you know, my wife and I absolutely loved your incontinence pads. You know, we found they were the best thing since sliced bread. People tend to discount that, don't they? We're so used now to seeing stuff on the internet telling us how wonderful everything is. And when you get it, it's all... It dissolves into nothingness almost. I'd much rather, if you wanted to have all these happy sort of things from people, put it in an appendix so that, you know, I don't have to waste my time going through that, but I can read the guts of what it is you're trying to tell me about how you've done over the year. What were the issues? What were the successes? What were the problems? You know, and so on. But that's just me having a little rant.
Onto that, Mr. Chair. I think some of the stories that we have included were requested to be included in terms of showing the return on people's personal journey and return from COVID and how our services have helped with their mental health and their personal well-being, and that was the reason for including those, and I take on board that we can include them in an appendix moving forward.
Yeah, I think that would be helpful, actually. Right, now, members, you've got some questions, I understand. So, Councillor Kenny, would you like to ask your question?
Yes, sir. What was the purpose of installing the gatehouse met lighting rig? What impact has it had on your operations?
Okay, yes. So the met lighting rig is a movable rig that can be mechanically moved down to ground level so that our team can actually work at ground level. They don't need to work at heights, up ladders. With a fixed rig, that is the case and takes a lot more time, a lot more resource, and has a lot more risk associated with it. It's been used as a training tool. It is sort of state of the art. So we've had students from the Prince's Trust and the local college actually benefiting from that piece of equipment and learning from that. It's also a very modern, flexible system. It can be tailored to performances much more easily and quickly. And it's an attractive sort of state-of-the-art piece of equipment in a very modern and flexible space. Thank you.
Okay.
Mr Chairman, can I just add a little bit to that?
Sorry?
Is that all right? Could I just add a tiny bit to
that? Yes, if you'd like to, yes.
That it's only because I know somebody who's in a wheelchair who has used it. So it is also very usable for disability.
Disability, yeah. Okay, thanks very much. Yes, Councillor Smith.
Can I just say, Chairman, that the rig was in our capital plan before FEMA took over. It took a long time to deliver because of some structural issues.
Yeah, I remember it was in the capital plan beforehand, yeah. Okay, now, Councillor Fardosi, I believe you've got a question as well.
Thank you, Chair. Can I ask how you intend getting the fitness membership
So our numbers have recovered well. At the time of the report, obviously we were on that journey, but as of today, and to confirm the current position, we have exceeded our pre-COVID numbers. In terms of our Learn to Swim scheme, that's shown 15% growth since this report was written, and is at 51% addition on top of our pre-COVID numbers, so that's recovered extremely well. In terms of our fitness memberships, which is our another main income stream, that's shown 32% growth since this report was written, and also 18% on our pre-COVID numbers. So they have recovered, and that's being done through our exciting range of new classes and programming, our excellent instructors providing fantastic facilities for the community, and obviously a promotional marketing campaign, a comms campaign that we keep our customers informed and communicate with them.
Okay. Yeah, well,
those are very strong percentages. Is it resulted in the fact that we're now closer to our capacity in terms of what we're able to provide, or is there more stretch in the system?
With the Learn to Swim programme, that is, we have a sort of a number that's the maximum that we can fit in a particular swimming pool facility, and we are stretching and reaching towards that target. There's a huge demand, having had children not having been able to have swimming lessons for 18 months to 2 years. School swimming also returned throughout this year that we're talking about, so the demand has sort of increased, probably on a very steep angle in terms of people being able to return to use facilities.
Okay, thank you very much. Now we come on to Councillor Harp. Next question, Councillor Harp.
Next question. Will there be an opportunity to continue with the HAF project?
We very much hope so, yes. That's the Holiday Activities and Food Programme, which we ran at Doxey Primary School in the summer of 2021 in August, and repeated again in Easter, which I didn't think fell into this year actually, but it fell into the new financial year. So that's a scheme funded by Partner for Education and facilitated through the Staffordshire County Council. And we ran that for 4 weeks in August, as I say. Really rewarding project. It was delivered free of charge to those children that attended. It was targeting children that were entitled to free school meals, and it was all around holiday hunger and the issues around that. So it's providing fun and engaging activities to get them physically active, and also to provide them with a hot meal, which we did throughout that period. So yes, the funding, we have to wait for the Department for Education to say, and the County Council to say, yes, this funding's available again, but we very much apply for it going forward. We did it again in the summer this year, so we hope very much to be able to carry that on.
How did you find the take-up of it?
It was mainly children from Doxy School that attended, so it was a captive audience, if you like, and people, we'd probably have up to 20 children a day attending the sessions. It varied on lots of things. We were still suffering with a bit of COVID, people having COVID, etc. The weather was good or bad, it seemed to affect attendance.
So you're happy with that?
Yes, yeah, it's an excellent project, really worthwhile.
Really good.
Okay, thank you, Councillor. Now, Councillor Godfrey, you have a question, I believe.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the report. Just a quick question from me. What are the reasons for the recruitment and retention issues that you reference? And are there any particular roles, posts that you're referring to?
Yeah, sure. So I think we're all aware that recruitment across the UK is a challenge for businesses, particularly in the hospitality, leisure and cultural sectors. I think every day I'm hearing things on the news about recruitment and retention of staff being an issue. For us within Freedom Leisure in Stafford, our lifeguards and swim teachers and hospitality assistants were out of business, if you like, for a while during furlough, so a lot of their qualifications, particularly the lifeguard qualification and swim teacher qualifications, may have expired within that 2 year period that we were sort of in and out of the workplace. So that did create an issue in terms of having to retrain a lot of staff and not having the staff when we were going out to recruitment that were qualified to take those roles. The other issue we noticed, particularly in the local area, was that due to the university not being a local workforce for us to pull on, so with Stafford University moving out of the Stafford town, we lost that sort of workforce that would maybe help us out during term time if they were studying at the university in Stafford, that we could then bring in to do some of those roles. And a lot of those roles were very attractive to that workforce. And also, so they were the key jobs that I think were affected, with the lifeguards, swim teachers, the hospitality side of the business.
And just to add that, that was a nationwide challenge really in terms of coming out of COVID and then the increase of demand for swim teaching, what meant that there was a lag in qualified staff being available. So we've been working hard on that for the last 12 months and more really to meet that demand and the challenges that we face.
So for you, Chair, are you so basically you think you're over the hill now with that? So it's a problem that's addressed and you want some of the future problems?
I think it's ongoing. There's always a transient workforce. You don't have a static workforce in this industry, so you're constantly retraining and developing people. We also have done quite a bit of succession planning. Myself as an example, as Mr. Chair alluded to, obviously I was the events and active communities manager and have been now promoted to the area manager earlier this year. There's other people within our business that have gone from duty management to general management. So we're looking at succession planning and recruiting and making sure our workforce is suitable and fit for purpose for the business. And throughout the whole time, we have been able to deliver our services, in challenging times with the resources that we have had, and had to maybe multi-skill people, cross use them across the business to make sure we can
Okay, just one final comment. Yeah, I think it's very interesting. He said that one of the issues he had was people losing their qualifications over the period of the pandemic, which is probably something people wouldn't have thought of. So thank you very much for that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. And now we have Councillor James.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mm. How are the other contracts across the country performing, and will this have any impact on the Stafford contract?
Yeah, that's similar to the Stafford contract, really, in that, you know, post-COVID, we went quite hard, really, to sort of react services and provide those opportunities as early as we could and as effectively as we could. And we've seen across the business positive performance from a number point of view. There is still a lag on fitness memberships, and although fitness membership numbers are increased, overall as a business there's a lag on the income associated with that. So when you sort of look at the yield of those numbers, then sometimes that's a different outcome in terms of the actual income generated by that. So in terms of an income position for fitness memberships, which is one of the largest lines, income lines across the business, probably about 85% recovery, and that's industry-wide, really, in terms of some of our other colleague trusts as well. However, the demand for swimming is well above 100% and beyond, and therefore somewhat balancing off those different income functions, really. Stafford sits on our league tables in terms of sort of those indicators towards the top of those within our sort of 25 partnerships that we have. But each partnership needs to stand on its own two feet. So no matter what, you know, the position is in a partnership that's perhaps at the lower end of the league table, that doesn't have an impact on Stafford, because each in a way it's his own sort of unique business with, you know, a different specification, outcomes and resource package associated with that.
So what you're saying is we're ring-fenced?
Essentially, we have a contract with you to deliver your services for a given management fee. So that's what we aim to do, absolutely.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thanks for your question. I've got one question about the Shakespeare Festival. Now, I mean, we've had the Shakespeare Festival going for years in the borough. Very proud of it, actually. I mean, you know, we see it as one of our flagship events, really, which brings quite a lot of people attention, sometimes national attention, and it can bring footfall into the borough and so on. People spend money. What's your attitude towards the Shakespeare Festival?
In terms of this report, obviously, it didn't happen last year. In terms of during the lockdown, we couldn't go ahead, but it went ahead this year and was a great success.
Mm. So you accept that it is a great success, and
it's a success in terms of its the production and the actual experience is being delivered safe and memorably. Yes.
Is there any aspect of it that you would consider not to be such a great success?
Well, I think in terms of its, cost to produce, cost to put on, it's an expensive production. Naturally, that's a challenge at a castle with the infrastructure and the cost of supply services, especially since, you know, obviously, as we move forward within a high inflation environment. So yeah, it's something to consider, and I'm sure we'll be talking to the authority as a partnership, because ultimately we're delivering what we've been asked to deliver in terms of the events and the cultural activities, and we talk to the authority about that, both in terms of the past and I'm sure we'll talk about that in the future.
Right, thank you. Councillor, I've got Councillor Godfrey and Councillor Fordham.
Thank you, Chair. It's moving on from that, and the contract we do have is not just for our leisure services, but it's for our have some pretty unique buildings in Stafford, to in Stafford Borough, and we are very proud of them. And you manage them for us, and it seems to be managed very well. Will it be managed very well in the future?
Absolutely. That's what we are in a business for. We are a not-for-profit charitable trust that delivers on behalf of authorities those exact services, and you know, it is our intention to, as our vision is, to improve lives through leisure and the services that we deliver, so that never goes away. There's always challenges in terms of delivering that, especially when there's, you know, external economic environment challenges or local challenges. That will always be the case, but through dialogue and partnership is how we can best deliver those services. But absolutely, our intention is to maintain a successful and productive partnership with Stafford.
I have to say to you, Chair, I was a little bit disturbed from your question regarding the Shakespeare. It is it's quoted many times by all members of this council. It's jewelled the crown of our cultural side of the borough. And it would be more than a shame if anything was to happen to it.
Thank you, Councillor Godfrey. Councillor Fordham.
Thanks, Chair. Thank you for the report. My question is really about the timing of its delivery to this committee. I'm not sure when it was prepared and when it was made available, but we're now 8 months on from the end of the year, and there's a lot of important information there that I think it would have been useful to know about probably the end of the second quarter, May or June. So my question is timing. I'm not sure if that's an issue with you bringing it to us at this time, or whether it went to council and it's been looked at internally. But I just registered my concern that this information is well out of date, and it would have been more useful to have received it earlier.
It's what's asked for. This is exactly what was asked for on Freedom Leisure.
Yes, by us then. So we've asked for it to be reported in November. And my comment is, I think we should review that, because I think it's very late to take months on.
Yeah, actually, that is an important point. It was one I was going to raise later. And I do recall us wanting to have it discussed at an earlier stage, and that was very difficult. But I hope we have a meeting normally. Do we have a meeting in June?
Yes.
It would be really helpful, I would have thought, for this committee if we could have this report in June, which would then be much more current, present tense rather than past or past historic. Yes, Lee.
Thank you, Chair. I think June will be a challenge. Part of that is for Freedom Leisure to have their end of year figures and KPIs all returned and in order. So if we aim for June, I think we find ourselves in a difficult position of only being able to present partial information for the year. I think perhaps the meeting after that, which is normally July/August from memory, we had the only of the last one, didn't we? I think that would be more realistic.
Yeah. Yeah. Are you happy with that, members? Is somebody with July/August?
I'm looking at Ian to ask what's your view.
Well, if it cannot be done before July, then I'd be happy with July. I'm just saying eight months is an awful long time.
Yeah, I agree.
It's some important information.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, I'll be happy with July.
Yeah. Right, I think that's there's a consensus in the committee with that.
Chairman, it certainly needs to be earlier than 8 months.
Yes, absolutely, yeah. I think we're all agreed on that, in fact, aren't we? We do want an earlier report. And if necessary, if we're earlier, we'll have to be slightly back. Okay, now, there's one thing I did want to mention, and it's actually in your report, and there's a photograph of it even. On page 17 of the report, it's an empty MET studio, and I mean I visited the MET to actually see the play Handbagged, which is a very good play, much to be recommended, and I was on about the fourth, the third or fourth row, and I felt distinctly unsafe. Not when I was going up to my seat, that's okay. Not when I was sitting in my seat, although the seat was incredibly hard. And after a whole play, I did have the numb hind quarters, very much so. It almost as bad as sitting in a church. But what was the really serious thing was coming out of my seat and going down the stairs, which was a scary experience. Nothing to hold on to. You have to lift your leg to find the stair. It wasn't on the level. You then have to swivel round and go down a fairly steep incline with relatively narrow stairs, not like the main auditorium, which is great, and you can walk up gently up the incline. Your seats are level with the floor. And it was a scary experience. And in fact, the woman next to us, it was particularly scary for the elderly. I mean, young people, fine, they jump around all over the place. But we had an elderly woman sitting next to us. It wasn't my wife, but another elderly woman sitting next to us. And she refused to leave her seat during the interval. She was just terrified. She said, "I'm not getting out of the seat until the end. I'm not going to keep getting up and down here. It's too scary." Now, I did report that to the then manager of the Gatehouse. And the response the correspondence is probably in the files. The response I got was that the health and safety people were perfectly fine with that, no problem. The fire brigade had been in to inspect it, no problem. So therefore, more or less, go away. Now, I still feel, and some front of house people have told me that people have fallen. They told me that when I was at Handbag. That people had fallen down the stairs, and that people had said to them, "We're never coming here again because it's too dangerous." Now, if that happens, you start losing an audience. The last thing you want to do is lose an audience. They're your money, they're your income. So I just wonder if something could be looked at in that term, because all these nice things there, but I'm afraid, you know, I've got a major criticism of the MET, the Malcolm Edwards Theatre. And I'm just waiting for a serious accident to happen. So that's me. Councillor Jones, I think you wanted to ask a question, didn't you?
It strikes me, it leads off to the previous conversation we were having, that in these, it is interesting to go down memory lane, and the information that we've been given is quite encouraging, but we are living in quite difficult times. And it would be useful to get a feel for how things are going forward in terms of the impact of inflation, for example, and whether there are any services that are becoming fragile. I don't know whether this is considered to be confidential or what, but it strikes me that I'm more interested in looking forward than I am in looking back, and to have some information about how the current year is going to pan out and how we're going to be in 23 is quite important as far as councillors in the borough is concerned. So I don't know whether I'm allowed to ask that sort of question, but I hope I am.
Sure. Can I bring Ian here? Ian, as our legal eagle, what's your considered legal view on this?
Well, if you're asking commercially sensitive information of Freedom as an operator, then we can't deal with that in this agenda item. If it's confidential questions you want to ask as officers, then we can deal with that in the work programme at the end of the meeting.
I'm not asking for confidential information. I just want a picture painting of what is likely to develop and how we're going to respond to that. I don't see that that's confidential.
Councillor Godfrey.
I was rather hoping to ask some questions on the same subject as Councillor Jones has mentioned, and from the advice we've been given by a head of law, it looks like I won't be able to, unless we go into a confidential session. Can we do that?
Yeah. It depends how specific the answers are you want. If you want to, for free general idea of the national situation. I'm not sure whether they can do that. They might be able to do that without disclosing commercially sensitive information. But if you want them to go into the specifics of how they feel it's affecting their business, you might not even want to tell the council that. I don't know. That might be commercially sensitive to the operator. That's my point. They'll know better than me what's commercially sensitive to their operation.
Right. But is it the case that if the cabinet are privy to certain pieces of information from Freedom Leisure, then we, acting as a scrutiny committee, not as individual councillors, but as a scrutiny committee, and being part of the borough council setup, given that if we know the cabinet are already privy to the information, could we not be privy to the information as long as we go into confidential? That would be essential.
So the scrutiny committee can decide to scrutinise a topic that's within their remit. And if there is information that has already been provided to Cabinet, and a Cabinet decision has been made based on information, then the scrutiny committee can ask for that information confidentially.
Mm-hmm. But yes, Councillor Trowbridge.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This report is backward looking, not forward looking. That's what you're scrutinising, what they've done over the last year.
Well, I know that, but what I'm saying
is. Hang on, let Councillor Trowbridge have a say.
Anything coming forward, if it's coming through Cabinet, it will come to you anyway. It will have to come to you anyway.
But,
but there's a process. You know the process. There's a process to go through to get to there. This is last year's. We're scrutinising. Did they do a good job? Are we thinking they're going in the right direction? Have they, by changing all their energy usage and saved what is equal to 9 acres of forest, is that what we want, or are we going to say to them, no, we don't want that direction? We want you to go down a different route. I'm surprised no one said, brilliant, with what you're doing with energy. Tell me what's the future for that. Where are you going with that? You know, this is what I expect.
I think that may be what Councillor Jones is trying to tease out, amongst other things. So, Councillor Jones.
I can understand that there is some sensitivity about it, but I'm not arguing with what you're saying. Tell us more about what you've just said in terms of the way that it's going from an energy point of view, etc., if you've got that information.
So it sounds like these are questions then for officers who will know what discussions they've had with Freedom and Benny. And so we need to deal with it at the end of the work programme in confidence, because I don't know what your questions are. I think we need to... these aren't questions for Freedom, because anything commercially sensitive to Freedom you probably want to discuss here anyway.
But are you happy with that, Councillor Jones, as we talk about it in our work programme at the end of the session with the officers? But will the officers be able to give us the information we want? We don't know that, do we?
Yeah,
we won't know until it's too late.
I think I said that I would, from my point of view, I'd like to paint a picture painting of how the near future is likely to develop. I don't want the T crossing and I dotting. I just want, if difficult times that we're living in is a picture painted of how we're responding to the challenges and what that effect will have on the well-being of Stafford citizens.
But
I don't think that's unreasonable.
In a sort of impressionist style, perhaps, rather than... In an impressionist style, rather than hard-edged.
Yeah.
Sorry, Ian?
Yeah.
Sorry, I was just
going
to...
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm happy to, I think many of you will be aware of Freedom, ourselves being in the public eye, leading the charge from an operator point of view, and you've probably seen the press around the country that this is a very challenging time for leisure operators, particularly those with swimming pools, as we have in this contract, that are high users of obviously gas and electric. You know, just as information then that's in the public domain, if you like, through
whether that's through the BBC in terms of TV or radio or press articles that you may have read, that our energy is going to be a huge challenge for us as an organisation and for all our partners across the board moving forward. Our energy use, if you like, or energy cost is going to go up from £7 million to £22 million over a full year. So that's the challenge that we are in. And that's public knowledge, that's out there. You know, we're not, you know, shy in terms of sharing that, because that's the reality of what we've been faced with, that external factors or whatever they may be, we can all sort of make judgments on that. But the impact is, you know, clear and present on ourselves and the way our sort of contracts have been scheduled. Unfortunately, we are you know, impacting that finance, or that challenge is impacting us from now, from November. So what we're doing about it, we're going nationally, as we have done, in terms of that, to raise the profile, because ultimately this is not something that any one partner or organisation can face up or sort of solve. Clearly, we are talking to our national governing bodies like UK Active and Community Leisure UK, Swim England, etc., all in partnership, lobbying government directly with our local MPs, where we have actually closed a swimming pool in Rye in Kent, because the sport is not there to fund it through this winter period. And that's having a knock-on effect in terms of galvanising the actual members of parliament and our Senate members in Wales to realise this is a reality. This is a real challenge for community assets and services. So we're campaigning really hard on that. We're talking to all our partners about what that means locally, and it means different things to different contracts across our portfolio, because they've all got different facilities. And yes, you know, that's the picture at the moment. It's very much a live picture,
yeah.
And it's there are discussions ongoing on a daily basis. We are looking at, and we have done numerous mitigating measures and actions. So in terms of the energy efficiency we've put into buildings over the last few years, have really made an impact and have softened that blow as much as we possibly can. We're looking at pricing, we're looking at all our aspects, including lowering the pool temperatures, which, you know, has become an issue. And we have done across the portfolio in a sensible, appropriate manner to reflect the challenges that we face. So I guess that's an overall summary of the picture. That's all in the public domain, so you know there's no problem in sharing that with you. But what we will be doing is talking to the authority and sharing you know, what the challenge is, and hopefully, you know, work through as a partnership how we can manoeuvre through these choppy waters, really.
And of course, what is in the news is that quite a number of local authorities are now closing down.
Absolutely,
leisure,
yeah.
Facilities, and of course they can, because it's not a statutory service.
Yeah.
We don't have to provide it, but of course there are political consequences for those who do shut them all down. But so it's a real dilemma.
Yeah.
In terms of your energy saving measures, such as, you know, lowering the temperature of the water, I have to say my wife is in full agreement with that, because she says that it's much better if we're doing proper swimming to have a slightly lower temperature rather than having a bath water temperature. So she's very happy with the fact that, you know, the temperature's gone down a bit.
Yeah, 3 degrees is high enough.
3 degrees, well, there we are. That's one extreme. Councillor Wiltshire.
There's certain things I'd like to discuss with you and officers, and I'll dream of mentioning them in this room, but it does lead from what you were mentioning. Now, you said it's mixed and matched with the different authority partners that you've got, and you've got some arrangements to carry on the service and the contracts you have. I've noticed, it's in the public debate, so it's not a secret, that obviously you have had negotiations with other authorities and presumably you've had financial settlements with other authorities. Now, again, I'm trying to walk on a tightrope here. Is our contract looking reasonably safe, or is it? Are we the ones? One of the ones you're going to be talking to? I'm trying to be careful.
All our partners, because ultimately it's your service, it's your facilities, and we're talking to all our partners. And we had some initial discussions about that. Absolutely. We talk to all of them. Some of them want to talk to us more than others, which is absolutely fine. And we need, as I said, in terms of the overall position and operating model, each partnership needs to stand on its own 2 feet.
Yeah, I get that. And just to finish this survey, which started about half an hour ago, we're probably a little bit different to a lot of the contracts which we do up here, which is your cultural side. And presume that's all in the mix as well.
It's all part of the contract, so we don't sort of look at it in any individual way. It's what we are being asked to deliver, and that's what we want to deliver in the future.
Well,
thank you very much, Councillor Godfrey. Councillor Trowbridge.
Thank you, and may I say you're delivering it very, very well. What this committee could do to help Freedom Leisure is, when they are out and about, speak of the positives. Speak of your wife swimming and enjoying how much she swims. If you speak of all the positives that's happening, we won't lose swimming pools, we won't lose theatres, we won't lose facilities, because people all want to use it.
At any price?
Pardon?
At any price?
What do you mean by any price?
Well,
I haven't seen a report about someone falling down these stairs. I also went to Handbagged and saw a lot of elderly in there sitting on those seats. And yes, maybe it wasn't as perfect as the main theatre, but it's a different pricing. It's a choice.
No, I'm saying it's dangerous.
Well, so you're saying it's dangerous.
I am saying it's dangerous.
But fire service isn't.
And
you know,
they said that about Grenfell, didn't they?
Okay,
until
let's
they didn't
try
anymore.
Try down the positive route and build Freedom up so that they do get more people in, so that things do look more attractive, and they're not having to come back for, can we shut the swimming pool next year?
I think, can I just be clear on that? It seems to me, if one says something which is perhaps a bit critical, a bit negative, one is told, no, one has to be positive all the time.
No, that's not what I'm saying.
Excuse me,
I
didn't interrupt you. Please don't interrupt me.
I am
having my say now. You've had the chance earlier. I am now replying to your point. And my point would be that one can be negative where it is necessary. But one should always strive to be positive. There's no doubt there are positive aspects of the contract. It'd be mad to think it's all negative. That's a nonsense view of the world. But one has to be willing to speak up if you find something which doesn't seem to be right.
I absolutely agree with that.
Good.
Of course you've got to speak.
Well, we can agree on that, Councillor Trowbridge.
When you are outside of this room, please be very positive.
I do assume that we're all very negative.
Well, I've heard some very negative things said outside the room. Yes, I have, it doesn't help.
But again, this is anecdotal. I've heard some very negative things said outside the room. Can you bring any evidence for that? Can you tell us what those negative things were? Were they justified?
Okay, let's move on.
I think exactly.
Please support Freedom wherever you can.
Yeah.
But that assumes that we don't, and I'm sure we all do, members.
And not for the political aspect that you mentioned, but health and safety for everybody, health and fitness for for everyone yeah. in the borough.
No problem.
Councillor Pert.
Mr. Chairman, can I just suggest that we scrutinise Freedom while they're here? And if there's an additional conversation that you want to have, Chair, that we do it without Freedom, because I think, you know, I'm assuming the committee would like to hear from Freedom.
I think they most certainly
Chair,
would. Councillor Godfrey.
Can we move that we have a conversation after the work programme today?
Mm-hmm. With the officers?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Right, members, are there any further questions?
Can I, Mr. Chairman, can I just, the recommendation is that the Resources Scrutiny Committee notes the information.
That's right, yes.
So I move that we note the information and move on to fees and charges.
Thank you. All agree?
What are we doing after the work programme?
But we're going to have a debate. We're going to question the officers further after the work programme. Yes, I think we've agreed that as well. Okay. So can I say thank you very much indeed, the representative from Freedom Leisure, who are coming this evening. Thank you for being as frank with us as you can be. Okay. Thanks again. Safe journeys back as well. Come and take a seat then, by the table, Councillor Pert. Councillor Pert is our finance expert for this evening.
I'm trying to intervene with you having handbags at dawn.
Okay, well now members, we come on to when I get to it, page 24, I'm told. Page 24, fees and charges review. I think there's only one fee or charge that we've got in resources, which is over the 12.3% threshold, and which is section 106D, the variation charges. I'm not even quite sure what they are anyway. So, Councillor Pert.
Through you, Chair, the section 106 agreement is a developer agreement when they secure planning.
Yeah, it's a deed of variation
and
charge.
It's a deed of variation of that 106 agreement.
Okay.
So effectively, it is only paid by developers, effectively.
Right, okay. And it's comparable to Cannock Chase District as well. So
benchmarked against other authorities, and it's the exact same figure for the Cannock, yes.
I mean, my only comment on this would be the actual inflation rate that we're using. We seem to be using RPI, which has been discredited by the Office of National Statistics on more than one occasion. CPI is the one which is more often used now, and if one wanted to have a compromise between them, there's CPIH as well, which could be used. And I understand in earlier discussions that the authority could be looking at possibly using CPI in future.
Through you, Chair, I have said that we'll look at that, but obviously what we've been doing in the past is inflation's been quite low, so actually as set out in the report, we actually said in terms of percentage increase to be looked for around 5% for what the market could bear. So.
Okay, thanks. Are you all happy with that fee and charging?
Yeah.
So we've noted that as well, presumably. Have we recommendation of the do we note this? I think we note this as well, don't we, Councillor James? Fine.
What have we noted?
We've noted the fee and charge increase over 12.3% on paragraph 5.5.
Well, that's
25.
Sorry, Councillor Pert.
Yeah, for clarity, Chair, majority of fees and charges aren't going up by 12.3%. They're going up by between, it's about 5%, and then rounded.
Yeah.
We'll have that debate on the whole thing of fees and charges in the round, presumably the council meeting. That's something to look
Happy
forward
to have
isn't
debate
it?
Here
yeah.
now,
well,
Chair.
The council meeting is an appropriate place.
Well, a council meeting will be appropriate. We've all agreed on this. Let's not generate conflict when it doesn't exist.
No conflict.
Thank you, Chair. We move on to page 27 then, Mr.
Thank
Chairman.
You, right. We're now... Oh, sorry, I've got to... Councillor Dodgery and Councillor Fordham.
Yeah, just before we move on, we look forward to the debate that will take place in the Council Chamber. I'd just like to ask the Cabinet Member who's sitting in for the portfolio holder at the moment, what are you going to do about £2 million black hole?
Through you, Chair, clearly it's in everyone's interest to make sure that we have a balanced budget, and that is obviously what we're working on. We are currently working on. We are currently working on the budget for next year, as you would expect, because that is the standard timetable that we work to every year. One of the key feats, however, is what the Chancellor, I can't tell you who it is, what the Chancellor is going to do a week today, and the local government settlement is a key input to that, and I hope I hope the Chancellor recognises the sterling work that all local authorities have done over the last few years and before, but particularly through COVID, and the difficulties that many of our residents are going to face over the next few years, and that they need a strong local government to be able to do that.
Yeah. I'm sure we'd all say amen to that, actually, Councillor.
I totally agree with what you just said there, obviously. But if you have got a problem, you will have to make cuts, and it'll be very easy to see where the cuts will fall, Chair.
Okay, thank you. And in terms of a balanced budget, of course, we have to make a balanced budget, don't we, by law? We can't do anything else. If we tried to have a budget deficit, government inspectors would descend on us in droves, wouldn't they, and take over the running. So, Councillor Fordham, and then, then...
Are you going to have to remember names?
Councillor Dodson, I'm having senior moment. Councillor Dodson. After Councillor Fordham. No, after Councillor Fordham.
I'd like to stick on page 25, the last sentence, in fact, which Councillor Godfrey referred to in the budget gap of 2 million. Very interesting to see that number. Not entirely a surprise, but it's not very helpful if there aren't any assumptions attached to it. So I'm just looking at a number. I don't know what on earth we're assuming when we come up, float a number like that. And I think we ought to know about some of those.
So, through you, Chair, can I just pick up the last comment on the last conversation and then just pick up the answer here through you, Chair? I think whilst the £2 million is a significant number to go and find, one has to also remember that we're a well-managed council. We've taken the big decisions over the years, whether it is in terms of outsourcing of leisure, sharing of services, any number of other things that I could bore committee with. But I think the answer to the Council's question, if you don't mind, is we clearly will bring the assumptions as part of the whole budget process, and that is due to come early in December.
Mm-hmm. All right, Councillor...
Sorry, can I just follow up?
Okay, it's supplementary.
So I understand what you're saying and why you're saying it. So I'll simply ask, within those projections, there is presumably... an increase in precept, and there are presumably assumptions made on salaries, for example.
Through you, Chair, there was already a direction of travel in terms of precept, and I can't confirm what that precept is because clearly we're not in that position. And in terms of salaries, that is a national negotiation that is going on at this moment in time. But we will bring all that information to Council. When it's all together in one place, I think it would be inappropriate for me to start pre-announcing stuff, then not seeing the overall whole picture. The Chair that you mentioned just a minute ago.
Yeah, I totally accept that. But there is therefore, based on this national negotiation, there is an assumption within this number.
There will be assumptions, and we will be very clear what those assumptions are.
Okay. I'm just wondering if it's 2 million or actually in
fairness, Chair, some of those assumptions change as we do more delving and digging and more work and as time moves on. And we will factor that in and share that with Council because it is a fundamental part to what we do. And we also need to be very fair and recognise the impact on our staff as well at the same stage.
Okay, thanks very much indeed. Councillor Dalton.
Two issues, Mr. Chairman. One, I find find it unusual that a scrutiny committee believes it doesn't have to look at some of the detailed numbers that are before us, and we're going to leave them for the full council to comment on, which I don't think is actually the function. I think the function of the scrutiny committee is to look at the numbers that are in front of it, that it is supposed to be looking at, and not pass the buck to the full council to talk about. And the second one, I think the numbers that we're looking at in 6.1, if one's been around on these scrutiny committees for a while, you'll recognise that at this time of year, when we have very little concrete information, the number can be as big or as small as you would like it to be, and it is absolutely useless in terms of having something to discuss, because until you get some more concrete figures, the council has no capability of actually trying to judge its course of action, because it just doesn't know anything that it can work on.
It hasn't got sufficient information to really.
That's right.
Okay, but I noticed your earlier comment. You said that we should be scrutinising all the relevant figures. Now, if you look at fees and charges, we've only got one figure in front of us, which is the one over 12.3%.
Yes.
Are you suggesting we should have seen all those other figures, which we are responsible for as Resources Scrutiny Committee, just for the resources area, so that another scrutiny committee would look at other departmental areas and so on?
Mr. Chairman, if the numbers are available, I believe we should be scrutinising them.
But they are. They should be available, all those fees and charges for resources.
Well, I think there are a number that are in there, and they're referred to as going up by 5%. And so our comments should be based around the 5% if we want to talk about it.
Yep.
If we don't want to talk about it, then we can accept it's an average 5% across the patch.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this could be, if you wish this to be, this could be a recommendation that in future years we get all the fees and charges for resources scrutiny.
Well, if we're supposed to be scrutinising them, then we should have them.
But let's Councillor Pert.
Thank you, Chair. Can I just add to the debate 2 points? First of all, all scrutiny committees agreed to delegate the fees and charges to officers that were at RPI or less. That's why they have not been brought to this committee, and to take a different decision would have to go through council, because it affects all committees. That's my first point. And the second one is, I think, unfortunately, this conversation is slightly in advance of itself, because actually you'll get all the budgets as part of the overall PACs for the whole of the council in January. I take on board the points, but in reality, the discussion this evening should really be about, don't let me tell you what you should be discussing, but the whole point of this report is about fees and charges, and then all the other stuff will fall off the back of that.
Yeah, I'm guided by the members of this committee, and if they feel there's a concern about something, then I think we ought to take those concerns seriously and explore them.
We can bring the budget in January when you next meet, Chair.
Yeah, I think the principle is that it is better for the discussion to take place at scrutiny committee rather than full council.
Indeed.
But
that's the basic point. I think there's a dispute there, because I think other councillors might have a different view. But my view is that the scrutiny committee has an opportunity of going into the sort of detail that is not appropriate to the full council.
We've got time to debate it and find out the reasons. But if the information is not there, then we can't scrutinise it.
Yeah. I take the point. But Councillor Pert is saying that the various scrutiny committees agreed last year.
The council
agreed last year that
in paragraph 5.1, the revised financial regulations were agreed by council on the 16th of September 2019. What I would say through you, Chair, is that there are a full copy of the fees and charges we're proposing on the members' portal, so any member can see exactly what those charges are proposed to be.
I couldn't
But I think Councillor Dodson's point is that he ought to be able to raise those concerns at a scrutiny committee. And have a discussion with other members, not a conversation with himself, as it were, by looking at those figures alone. Is there any way around this?
I don't think that's for us to...
In the financial procedure rules, council agreed the way forward is that all ones that are under inflation are delegated to officers. Any new fees, any overinflation, any that had an impact on the overall budget, they are reported to you separately. Now, it just so happens this year there's only one. Mm. Previous years, there tends to be more. But this year, there's only one, nine. It tended to be over inflation, and that is what predominantly is before you was scrutiny to consider. But all the fees and charges are on the members' portal, so if you had a particular one, yes, you could ask a question today.
Yeah, it's a problem of high inflation, isn't it? Because had inflation been, say, 3%, and we're fairly used to that sort of figure, aren't we, over the years, we've been used to low inflation. When we would have had far more of these coming in, because we could have been putting our charges, say, above 3%, and we'd have a much greater period of discussion. But with a high level of inflation, when we're putting a lot of our charges below that RPI level, very few are going to come to the individual scrutiny committees. So it's a problem in the sense of high inflation, isn't it? But how? How do we move around this?
Okay, but the fact is really clear, Chair, that actually we're looking at putting up the majority of the fees and charges by about 5%.
Exactly, below the level of RBI.
Is, you know, we will have taken cost increases at significantly more than we're putting the fees and charges up by. So then there is a clear recognition of the impact of putting up the fees and charges more to our residents.
Yeah, and yet we have the comments from a member of this committee saying he would like to be able to scrutinise all the figures for fees and charges which pertain to this committee. Notwithstanding the fact that a few years ago we said, no, we don't need to.
Sorry, Chair. I thought that the conversation was about whether the discussion was had in committee or in council.
That was a secondary thing as well.
I wanted to ensure that where we needed to discuss the numbers, the discussion was had in committee, not at full council, when by definition the discussion is quite limited. Mm.
But I think the problem there is that if it's on the agenda, I don't think you can stop councillors from raising it at full council. And I suppose, to be honest, you get more publicity by raising it at full council. You're more likely to get it into the press. Let's be honest. That's the reality, isn't it?
Oh, sorry, that's one of the
How often does the press come here? I wonder how many people actually listen to this. You know, I mean, our single listener... It's probably fascinating, but you know, it's in council where you're more likely to get things in the press and get publicity. That's the reality.
I'm not asking for a comment.
Councillor Godfrey.
Thank you, Chair. Councillor Dodson is absolutely right. We should have as much information before as scrutiny as possible.
If it needs scrutiny,
I'm going to sell like my usual stuff record now. What we do here is not scrutiny, quite frankly. You know, we sort of look at agendas, nod our heads, fall into party lines, rattle a little bit, may have a few jobs and go. We really should sit down and scrutinise more than we do. And I think you're absolutely right, mate. You should sit down and look at the figures. I can't agree more with you. I agree with you. I agree with everybody today. I agree with you, Chair, that the council is not just a rubber stamping exercise. Mm. It's not somewhere you go to sit there to put your hand up and say that the cabinet are right, we agree with them. It's a committee. It's the top committee of this council. It is run on a committee basis. There is a chair that happens to be the mayor. and you can debate and discuss anything you wish there. And it's any ruling group's pleasure. It is the ruling group's pleasure to sort of say, no, this is taken, you could have gone into scrutiny. No, if you want to take something to council, you take it to council, you debate it in council, you debate it in public. And it annoys me to think that people disrespect council for what it is. It is a committee, and it should be used as a committee if members want to. And the other thing I shall say is, Councillor Pert mentioned something about prudent management of finances over the last few years. I'll just say a reduction of 2% in the council tax. You know, that would have more than made up for the £2 million black hole that we've got before us tonight. Thank you.
Right. Thank you, Councillor Godfrey.
That's factually incorrect. Sorry, Chair, I think that's factually incorrect in fairness.
What is factually incorrect?
What the councillor said, it was factually incorrect that 2% on the council tax made 2 million quid. I'm sorry. Unless I misheard what was said, mathematically that just is factually incorrect, and I wouldn't want to give out that impression.
To our single listener. Councillor Godfrey.
If you go over the period of time, how many years since the 2% reduction?
Still think it's factually incorrect, yeah.
Times up by, was it about £60,000 a year? You're not far short, Chair.
I would say that if we don't need the money, we shouldn't be taking our residents' money.
It was done for political government.
Thank you very much. So we're having another little ping pong match now. Yeah. That's fine. Okay, let's move on. Let's move on, members. So we've now done the fees and charges review, noted that. Now we've got quarter two performance report, we will be relieved to know. That's on page 27. We've got Tracy here, and I'll go through it page by page. Please stop me when you want to say something, or you've got a question. So page 27, page 28, 29, 30. Page 30, page 31, page 32, then we come on to the figures, page 33.
Yes, Chair, question. Please. In these budget figures, I'm assuming there are salaries.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Fine, page 34. Page 34. Right, I note the reduced crematorium income and the reduced cemeteries income. Are we hitting sort of consumers' relatives' resistance?
We better.
Through you, Chair, I think it's mainly in relation to activity. It was high during COVID, and I think we discussed at the last resources scrutiny that we do set the fees and charges that income over a period of time. And as part of the budget exercise, we have looked to rebase those budgets. And we're also giving ourselves greater detail. So there's two types of cremation you can have, a full one and a basic one. So we're putting a separate code in there so we can understand whether there is actually more people having that type of service going forward to give ourselves some extra information. And there is also another crematorium that's open nearby, but we haven't lost any.
Okay. I think I was reading a newspaper article recently saying that people were sort of moving down market, as it were, to cheaper cremations and all the rest of it. It was becoming more fashionable, in fact, to do that. Councillor Pardesi.
Chair, could I ask the reasons behind the reduced pest control income?
The pest control net income, what I'm referring to there is the overall cost of the service. And we have had reduced income, and some of that is in relation to businesses no longer operating, so we're not getting their income. And also, the pest control service is very dependent upon how bad an issue you have with wasps and all of those seasonal things. I can't think of the right word. So that's where we've got it. So that's the overall cost. So we do recognise that it is a fluctuating service. So there is. Although there's four posts, one of those is kept vacant as a sort of floating post so that we can bring extra resources in as and when needed.
Okay. Thank you very much indeed.
Chairman, while we're on this
Councillor
page,
Johnson?
Could I ask, what exactly does reduced dry recycling gate fees mean?
So that means that we pay a processing fee to for our dry recyclate.
Right.
We then get a percentage back based on what the let's recycle rate is. And at the moment, the dry recycling gate fees are lower because we're recycling less glass, which has a cost to us, and we're also enjoying greater prices on our materials. Partly, I think, coming out of the blue bag and sorting separately for that commodity.
So by separating the paper waste into the blue bag, we're generating a reduction in fees,
yeah,
which is giving us an increased income.
Yes, and we're also enjoying the fact that we're recycling less glass.
It's quite a significant figure, Chair.
152,000.
Yeah.
152.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Right. Councillor Godfrey.
Thank you, Chair. Can I ask a couple of numbers? Every time we go through these, I ask the cabinet member for resources about staffing variations. I'm going to ask you the same question. So obviously, it comes up a lot, and the money's there for us to see. Now, I ask the question every time, and I get the same answer from Councillor Smith. I always say, are those vacancies, and they usually are, and are those vacancies going to be filled? And through you, Chair, the answer I normally get is yes. Can I be assured by your good self that any staffing variances we see before us on these reports from now on, then posts will be filled? Thank you, Chair.
Chair, I wasn't expecting that question. I obviously don't know what Councillor Smith has said in the past. So either we could answer that question through a written response through the Cabinet Member, which I think would be one alternative, or we could defer, but it probably would be better to get a written response through the Cabinet Member.
Thank you.
Mm. For all members of the committee.
Yes, Chair,
yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay.
If you're happy with that.
Yep, that's right.
I think
that's
it'd be inappropriate for me to speak on his behalf.
Okay. That's right. So that's page 34. Oh, sorry, Councillor Fordham.
Next page, Chair.
Ah, okay. Page 35. Councillor Fordham.
Page 35, planning and regeneration. Planning and regeneration is showing a very favourable forecast variance, more than $250,000, largely through parking increased income and development management increased income. I think we've touched on at least one of those earlier, and I'm partially offset by a list of smaller charges. I'm puzzled because I see no comment about staff shortages, but I've been told several times through the course of the year that staff shortages in planning in particular are a major issue and are causing considerable difficulty to the level of service we provide, but I can see no reference to it here. It's picking up on Councillor Godfrey's point to a impact.
Through you, Chair, there are staffing vacancies in planning, but we are employing agency staff to cover those vacancies. As you all appreciate, planning is very difficult to staff, and you get somebody in post and then they go to another authority. Mm-hmm. So they are working really hard on that, but that's why you don't see any staffing variations, because they are employing agency staff to assist.
So we are, in fact, at full complement in planning.
Agency staff, through you, Chair, are obviously more expensive than if we were employing them directly, so I can't comment on whether that is a full staffing complement.
Is there a report that is produced for scrutiny by any scrutiny committee that actually shows full complement, actual complement, number of test space? So we actually have a view of what's going on, because I'll be quite frank, I'm a qualified accountant. I find some of this confusing, because I don't think the information that is required by scrutiny is actually there in front of me.
Through you, Chair, I think the difficulty with that is obviously in providing these numbers to yourself, I've looked through and I know what all the staffing variations relate to, which post they are. In terms of who we've got in post, that would only be correct at a single point in time because that's a moving feast. So it could be right one day, but then we could have filled that post the next week, so we'll spend a lot of time trying to keep that up to date, effectively. And the other thing I would say, overall with the staffing variances, is that we do budget for all posts at the top of the scale, and they're not all employed at the top of the scale, so you will always get some staff savings showing through these budgets. And that's taken account of there.
Yeah, I appreciate the prudency. That's good. I can't see, but it's so difficult when a report is produced to have budgeted number of staff versus actual number of staff at that point in time. To me, it's a missing element. I'll just register that, Chair.
Okay. But I'm just wondering, well, I mean, we are following all the SIPFA rules, presumably, aren't we?
We
take our marching orders, as it were, from SIPFA by and large. Because if you're following all the SIPFA rules, then you're going to be okay. If you start breaking those rules, then you do stand the risk of something going wrong and someone feeling your neck, as it were, or collar. So I mean, there's an assurance we do follow SIPFA rules. And actually, no, Councillor, I'm sure I saw a table somewhere, not quite the one that you're alluding to. I saw a table, it may have been in the last digest or something, but there was a table showing for each department the number of full-time staff, number of full-time equivalent staff, number of casual staff, and it was there, but I think it was the end, toward the end of the digest. Did you see that, Councillor James? Right, there.
Through you, Chair, in the digest, there is always a starters and leavers, which gives you the opposite side of the question that's been asked effectively. You're just seeing it from the opposite lens. Whilst I'm just feeding back, I mean, the parking increase in income is against the budget, so we took a very prudent budget position. And clearly it's a key income line, but equally it's a measure of people coming back out into the high street and into spending money in the service economy. And I think it's the right thing to do for the budget to have it very prudent, and clearly that's good news. On the opposite side, on the flip side, finding planners anywhere in the country is really tough. And our preference, a strong preference, would be to have people permanently employed by the authority rather than bringing in agency temporary labour. Mm-hmm. Having said that, I think that we would prefer to have agency temporary labour than no labour. And it's really critical for us to make sure that it's a performing planning authority. Otherwise, the real danger is that the government step in and start determining planning applications on our behalf, which I think would be the worst scenario, and something to be avoided.
Councillor Goldberg?
Thank you, Chair. Perfectly assured by that, Councillor Burt. I will take that the staffing levels will remain the same, if not higher, over the next year or so.
I'm not sure I said that, Chair.
Okay, let's move on. That was page 34. Page 35, page 36, page 37. Page 38. Oh, page 37. Lawn administration. The column on the right hand side, staffing variation 16,000. What was that about? Do we know?
Those are two vacancies in one in corporate support.
So there's two vacancies.
Yeah.
And presumably the intention is to fill them, or is it?
They happened before COVID, and COVID affected the admin support that was needed authority. Now we're out of COVID, we're reviewing the ongoing requirements, so if they're necessary, we'll put a case forward for filling them.
Okay.
If not,
otherwise they'll be cut. Okay. That's page 37. Page 38. Technology. Staffing variations. They don't give any indication as the figure.
So that's a post, a GIS post and a legal graphics post, and a legal graphics post is the one retired.
Right, and is there
technology.
Is there going to be a replacement?
Through your chair, we signed that off through cabinet last week.
When you say you signed it off?
All vacancies go through cabinet,
yeah,
as you'd expect from a well-run.
But are you cutting those posts, or are you going to be employing others in their place?
We've replaced I think it was two technology posts.
So you've replaced the posts anyway.
Yes.
Okay.
But as I say, you know, as a well-run, financially managed authority, it is the right thing to do. The cabinet ask the same sort of questions that scrutiny would ask.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm sure our single listener will be happy to hear that. So, page 39, page 40, page 41. This is the one that I think was being alluded to earlier, wasn't it? The items to be allocated, just before half, about £354,010. Staffing variations, and I think you explained, didn't you, about this?
It's the 64,000. So this is we recognise that we've got everybody in at the top of the budget, so we put a overall vacancy saving in,
yeah,
just to say that we recognise that we'll be turning over, so that obviously we don't put council cuts off by too much or over saving.
Yeah. Right. Okay, thank you. Can you say that louder? I don't think our single listener performed that.
Thank you, Chair. Do you want me to repeat it?
No, I think we've... Okay, page 42 then. This is the capital portfolio. We've got corporate IT equipment and accommodation transformation and rationalisation, both of which appear to be on target. So, good news to our listener. Now, we come to the review of the Constitution. This is when it really gets exciting, isn't it? Now, the important thing is paragraph 5.4, and you can see the dates are set out, the recommended dates are set out. Hopefully that's fine for everybody. 23rd of January, 7th February, and 28th of February, all at 5:30 p.m. Of course, if we don't have that many things, we may cut down the number of meetings. Conversely, if there are huge numbers of constitutional amendments which people are desperate to have put onto our constitution, we'll have more meetings. So, anyone want to make any comments on that, Ian? Or
no? That's a fairly standard process, I think.
Yeah, I think we all know what's there. So you note that then, members. We've been informed. Good, good. Then we come on to the work programme. Now, bad news is that we're going to have a meeting on Tuesday, the 3rd of January. And I understand that is necessary because we've got to fit in with all the budgetary timetables and so on. Otherwise, it goes all awry. So the bad news is that we have got to meet on the 3rd of January at 6:30 p.m. I hope the better news is I'll bring some wine along, and my wife will make her inimitable, what are they called?
Mince pies,
that's it. So you'll have some refreshments. Okay, bring a chauffeur if you like. So that's the date of the 3rd of January, and you can see that it's all to do with the budget process. And the suggestion is, therefore, in order to not to delay things too much at the meeting, the gender pay gap report, which is scheduled to be in the January meeting, be moved to the February meeting of the of the group, of the Resources Scrutiny Committee. Are you all happy with that? move it from January, the gender pay report from January to February. Okay, good. And that's about it, is it? So, yes, Councillor Godfrey.
Just a couple of things. First of all, we've got future items, we've got procurement. So it seems we've been speaking about this for ages.
Mm.
There's still a lot before us.
I did ask about that. Where are we with procurement? Was it possibly a task and finish?
Yeah, the legislation is due to come into force next year, so if the conversations around our procurement practices, that's going to be heavily affected by the change in legislation, which won't come into force until next year. So my thoughts were your previous direction was, yes, we need to wait to see what the implications of that is.
Do you know when it's likely to come out, Ian? Early part of the year or later?
Maybe towards the end of the first quarter.
Okay.
I'll keep an eye on it.
Yeah. But it is worth keeping it there, so reminded we've got to do something about this when the legislation does come out, we can absorb it. Councillor Godfrey.
Just one more thing, Chair, just as a matter of curiosity. As we're going through the budget process in the next couple of months, it'd be quite useful to have a detailed update on our reserves.
Oh.
See where we're up to, what we got, where is it?
Okay.
Right.
I'll ask Councillor Perch for a response.
Thank you, Chair, through you. Reserves go to main council in February. Given the amount of work that is involved in pulling that information together and the timeliness of them, it is usually brought to council in February.
Nicely stalled, Chair.
Factually correct, Chair. Mm.
Well, our meeting is the 28th of February, isn't it? So unless we had a meeting earlier in February just to deal with that matter.
Through you, Chair, you'll have plenty of opportunity to talk about reserves at the council meeting, and given the councillor is more than happy to debate the detail at council meetings, I'm sure that it could be picked up then. I don't remember any significant debate in all my years on the council about reserves. I look forward to that.
That's always the first time, isn't there, Councillor?
reserves can only be spent once, though.
Yeah.
Indeed. Okay, well, thank you. Thank you, members. So that's the work programme. But do remember that every member of this committee is perfectly entitled to suggest items to go onto the agenda. It's your agenda. It's not just done to you. It's something which you can choose to have debated or to scrutinise. So if you've got any ideas on things you'd like to scrutinise, do let us know, please. And then we can do our best to try and incorporate them. So there's a reminder about that. But okay, apart from that, I think we've now completed all the work, haven't we? Except for one thing, where we did say that we would come back to a discussion on this. So let's move to that now.
Can you move to the closed agenda, Chair?
So we could close the meeting now, you think?
Do we close the meeting completely?
So the questions you want to ask, alluding to confidential information, so you prefer to have that as a private discussion? I don't know without knowing the question, but if you suspect that maybe... Yeah, well, if we assume they are, then we'll go into private session and continue work.
Well, we'll say goodbye to our single listener.